today I'm going to read Duncan's War by Douglas Bond, illustrated by Matthew Burke. Chapter 1. Give away, ye coward English. Duncan Macheath lay prone in the heather, his head opening and closing on his weapon. With intense green eyes, he sized up the crumbling battlements of Dunfermline Castle. Only a narrow ridge separated him from his objective. With a faint toss of his head, his red locks flipping into his shoulder, he scanned his followers. They moved as one on his signal. He smiled a grim, determined smile and slithered silently forward, the heather parting around his lithe body like the cold North Sea parting from a haddock. Cresting the ridge with caution, he halted and peered around the tuft of moor grass. Their secure gates would have stood, and entrance to the castle gaped wide and deserted. Just as he hoped, their attack would be wholly unsuspected. He stole another glance at his clansmen waiting at the ready. For an instant, Duncan lay breast flat on the ground. He hesitated, his heart beating wildly against his ribs. Could he do it? Then he remembered the words of his father came into his mind. If ye've no cause worth dying for, my lad, ye've got no cause to be breathing God's air. Leaping to his feet, his stout weapon held aloft in defiance, he roared, "For the crown and for the covenant!" Then, like a berserk of old, gave that to being 14, he kept his hilt firmly girt round his middle. Duncan flung himself toward the unguarded castle. His bare feet seemed not to touch the heather as he ran. "Give way, ye coward English!" he screamed, his weapon circling madly over his hair. Weaving and ducking, he dodged crossbow bolts hastily launched by startled soldiers on the battlements. Boldly into the breach, like a valiant clan chief, Duncan dispatched the first English with a single stroke, and then another, and still another lay stretched at his feet. But what was this? Sneering English soldiers came at him from every side. Stroke for stroke, he diminished their number by two. More took their place and closed in around him. Then a blow on his head, searing pain. The castle spun round and round. He had to fight on. The gaze cleared for an instant of terrifying clarity. He parried a fatal stroke with a desperate thrust, and his would-be executioner lay at his feet. No time for gloating, and weakened from his wound, Duncan spun on his bare heels. A giant of a man, his sword hissing menacingly, stalked toward him, leering as he advanced. Suddenly, Duncan caught sight of a black and white streak, his clansmen bolting to the rescue, teeth bared in rage. Fighting shoulder to shoulder, they stoutly threw themselves on the giant and the remaining defenders. As suddenly as it began, the conflict ended. Not a single enemy soldier breathed. All about them, the ground lay strewn with the grim remains of battle. "The day is ours!" gasped Duncan, gingerly holding the side of his head as he collapsed into the moss-covered pile of stones. One eye blackened, his comrade in arms sat attentively before him, awaiting his next command. "You rendered good service today," said Durkan, patting the black and white head. And for what I dub ye," he held aloft his weapon, "with my herder's staff, I dub ye Sir Broody. I owe ye my life, Sir Knight, and I make no mistake, I pay that oath." And as he said these words, he solemnly lowered his stick on either side of his comrade's head. Broody grinned, and a tongue-lolling dog grin, and he sat dustfully looking up at his master. "Come here, boy, Duncan," said Duncan when he finished the ceremony. With a happy yelp, Broody placed his front paws on Duncan's chest and licked the red felt on the side of his young master's head. "And now you'll be my doctor, as it is, attending of my wounds," laughed Duncan, wincing as he touched the tender redness. A knock I gave myself failing about with my own stick. He laughed sheepishly. "Aye, but wounds is wounds in a battle," eyeing the sun as it peeked reluctantly out from behind the steel-gray barrier of the clouds. Duncan opened the goat's hair sorin hanging low from his waist and took out his meal of outcakes. Breaking one in half, he shared it with his dog. "You've earned your bannock," he said, scratching Broody's eyes. "And if I have fought here alongside Robert and the Bruce 350 years ago when this castle last fell." He looked around at the crumbled ruin, little evidence of its former glory, but the lower part of the central tower. "I'd have wanted none more noble than ye by my side." With intelligent eyes, Broody gazed fixedly at his master. As Duncan finished his lunch, a dutiful sheepdog trotted to the broken-down entrance of the castle and peered critically at the small cluster of sheep grazing on the hillside where they had left them only moments ago. "All's well?" asked Duncan as the dog returned. "Course it is," he answered in his own question, "or ye'd be off after him like a bullet blown of a musket of a king's dragoon hunting as a son of the covenant, like me," he added, frowning pensively. Duncan and his dog had explored these ruins many times, and most of the crofters from the surrounding hills, the glens, had for generations borrowed stones for repair fences and to patch up the chinks in the walls of their cottages. Picked over it was with each visit Duncan felt, with a quickening of his pulse, that this might be the day he'd uncover some long-forgotten treasure. His eyes narrowed as he scanned the mounds of rubble and the jagged remains of ruined walls. It had been a long winter of heavy snow, and the spring rains had come into torrents and had lasted for weeks. He poked curiously at the mossy stone with his stick. Circling the old wall, Broody at his heels, Duncan picked up a rock and hurled it at the battlements of the remaining tower. On his second try, with a clattering echo, he found his mark. A jagged hole gasping in the tower that must have been made by some heavy missile launched from a catapult during the final days of a siege. It gasped down at him, and he imagined It's to be the skeletal grin of an ancient laird whose tranquilly tyrannically ruled the peasants who once eked out a meager living in the surrounding glens. Broody waited patiently while Duncan, leaping along the broken down wall, scrambled to the highest point. Steadying himself, Duncan looked to the south and east. His eyes narrowed and his chin jutted defiantly. England lay that way. Then for an instant, the grayness overhead broke, and sun shone brilliantly on the green and purple of the hills. Some speckled the white with the sheep, while on the grassy slopes of others grazed and belted Galloway, black cattle with distinctive white belts around their middles. The spotlight of sunshine shifted, and as the clouds rearranged themselves overhead, they reflected off the slate of the hillside village of Darley. The valley of the King, far below the Glenkin, the broad waters of River Ken, meandering through the valley, the steeple of Parish Church rose above the cluster of cottages, their crow-stepped gables and the chimneys outlined in sharp relief. 4 years had passed since Duncan had been inside the stone walls of the church. Now under the control of Popish bishops and the local curate, a drunkard named George Henry, Covenanters and their families were forbidden to worship inside the literal sanctuary unless they swore allegiance to King Charles II as the head of the church and submitted to the blasphemous, slurring, homilies of George Henry. Hunted like beasts by the ruthless James Turner, chief enforcer of the king's will, Covenanter families like Duncan's fled to the hills, worshiping instead at secret field meetings, hearing faithful preaching from the lips of wanted men. Fugitive field preachers, out of loyalty to Christ, the only king of his kirk, risked their lives for the sake of their scattered flocks. And Turner was determined to see every one of them hang. The clouds shifted again, leaving the village in shadow. Duncan looked to the south, toward the northern reaches of Loch Ken, just visible at the foot of the glen. He drew in a deep breath. Sunlight sparkled in the mottled patches across the blue waters. Duncan watched the brown sails of a fishing boat scudding slowly across the lake in search of salmon. Several times a year, his father traveled to the bustling village of Wigtown of Solway Firth to sell wool, and Duncan remembered how immense the salty waters of the Solway looked when he first saw them. Stretching away westward to the open sea and to the south and England, he loved the screeching of the gulls, the salt sea smells, the sights and sounds of men and boats in the harbor. His father's brother His uncle Hamish worked as a fisherman somewhere near Edinburgh. Though Duncan had never been far away in Edinburgh, nor had he ever met his uncle, and his father told him about fishing on the sea. He told him all about the rising and falling of the fishing sloop on the waves, the fresh salt breeze on your face, and the thrill as the sails filled the boat, surged forward into the frothy seas. Springtime or not, this was Scotland, and the teasing sun soon disappeared altogether behind the clouds. The Loch Ken faded into the landscape, but Duncan continued gazing approvingly over the mutted countryside falling away on his every side of his castle. He often referred to Dunfermline and his castle. You could see an enemy coming for miles. A perfect place for a fortress, he concluded, leaning on his staff. Duncan often tried to imagine that it would have been like long ago when men fought within these walls for their lives and for Scotland. Nosing his way along the rubble, Broody suddenly halted in his tracks, ears erect, head cocked to one side. His nostrils flared and his eyes stared unblinking as he worked this new scent through the mysterious instructions of his dog brain. "What is it, Sir Broody?" asked Duncan. Long ago, he had come to respect his dog's instincts. "I won't mind if ye've gone and sniffed out some fresh meat for us. Mother'd be loving ye if ye've gone and done it." "What is it?" he urged. Duncan's mouth watered as he thought about how his mother had roasted the last rabbit Broody caught. It seemed like months ago. Through fields with oat cakes, his stomach gnawed and growled for meat. "Rabbit, is it, Broody?" hissed Duncan, crouching low beside his frog. "A fat one. Oh, let it be a fat one." His face now was close to the dog's. He sniffed. The boy's power of scent, though well trained to sniff at mealtime smells, was no match for a dog's keen sense of smell. Though Duncan smelled nothing, he did feel something. A sudden breeze moved his thick red hair, and he felt it on his cheek. He moved the right, and all was still again. Slowly moving to the left, he felt the narrow breeze again. "We've done it, Broody. You've done it, Broody," said Duncan, "though I can't say I know what it is you've done." Following the breeze on his cheek, Duncan leaned closer. Searching the mud, his eyes fell on a dark depression along the inside of the wall. He found a bonny hole. "Ye found a bonny hole," said Duncan, lilting sort of yonder wonder in his voice. "And if air's coming out at such a rate, it must be something more than a rabbit's wee burrow." For the next quarter of an hour, boy and dog worked side by side in enlarging the hole. Broody dug away at the mud and canine efficiency. And Duncan lifted the stones out of the way. "We've been over this ground hundreds of times," said Duncan, grunting as he reached farther into the hole, mud smeared on his cheeks. Spring rains must have washed away the soil that covered this passage floor. What do you think it's been, Rudy? Hundreds of years? Then, excited, Duncan's rear-rolled more than usual. His vowels tended to rise, to fall, to stretch themselves in all directions in the process. Duncan felt his heart beating faster and faster as he dug. Moments later, his eyes widened in excitement. Duncan said, "You really have done it." He ran a muggy hand through his hair. You've gone and found an old passage. So that was chapter one. Bye guys, see you later. See you later, see you later, see ya later. Bye guys.